This is Rich's Random Podcast Generator, episode 26, recorded January
26, 2014. Okay, here we go. Helen, welcome. I'm Jim.
I'm Rich.
And welcome to show number 26, recorded on January 26. We didn't plan it that way. 2014. Here on Rich's Random Podcast Generator, we cover just about anything we want, from group hangout conversations to tech product reviews to interesting interviews, all tech, all the time, all posted out at theaverageguy.tv. You can contact me or Rich via email. Just send that to jim@theaverageguy.tv or follow the show schedule on our Twitter account at theaverageguy.tv. If you're new to listening to podcasts and you're looking for an easy way to do it each week, you might want to consider using Stitcher, available for both Android and iPhone platforms. A great way to listen to podcasts both at home and on the road. You can even download them now for offline listening if you'd like. Of course, this show and all the past shows are available on Stitcher, stitcher.com. Search Rich's Random. We say it is education for your ears. We also have all the links to automatically download or stream the audio video podcasts to iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, Zune, many of the other podcatcher, and I guess when I say Zune, I should say Xbox Music now, available on the front page of theaverageguy.tv. Of course, you can always find us on YouTube, iTunes, Google+, or even on Facebook. We have a group going over there by searching The Average Guy Podcast, and actually all the links for those are out at theaverageguy.tv as well. Today I'm joined by the show's namesake, Rich O'Neill. Rich, how are you?
Pretty good, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, obviously we're not doing as well as the guys in Australia. Rennie just let us know that it's a public holiday in Australia, so all is good over there on a Monday morning in Australia.
What holiday are we talking about?
I don't know. They get like 17 a month, so, you know.
God. We gotta get out of the United States. I mean, we got, you know, you go over to Europe and they got like 4 months of vacation every year.
Does seem like it. They'll say they don't get enough. I talk to them all the time and they're like, no, we don't get that. We're like, come on. I don't know. There's some good life here in the United States as well.
Yeah, this is true, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Well, Rich, we got some things on tap. You said you may like to run this podcast off the rails, so that'll be fun to see if that happens indeed. And we'll see how things go today. How's that sound?
That sounds good. You know, one of the first things I got to say I've been thinking about lately, and I know I'm not alone, is that you know, with the revelation that Snowden brought and the NSA is tapping and hoovering up all the information they can, and the back doors to the, you know, to encryption and SSL and RSA's, you know, encryption being compromised, and I mean it just goes on and on and on. Kind of tends to elevate my paranoia a little bit. I'm not one of those who thinks that, hey, I'm not doing anything wrong, so what do I care what they collect? I'm more in the school of, you know, knowledge is power, and, you know, the rest of that saying, power corrupts. I don't believe they need that much, I don't believe the NSA, but that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to say is that in light of all of this, you know, I feel like I can't even comfortably download and install a Chrome extension. I wanted an extension for OneNote to be able to just right-click and say, hey, send this to OneNote. Like you can, it's built right into IE, but I don't use IE, I use Chrome. And I got to thinking, you know what, I don't know what's going to OneNote and what's going back to the authors of this extension. So I wrote up a little question. I sent it off to Christian. I pretty much knew what the answer was, but I wanted to see what he had to say. And basically, you know, your recourse is, if you are curious about this, is go ahead and, you know, set up Wireshark and run it and try to filter it and try to find the, you know, any content that may be going to some website that you'd have to figure out who that is too, you know. So it's a pain in the neck, you know. I mean, we've got enough things to think about, you know, we're trying to make Google Hangout work properly. I don't need this too, but it's here and we're stuck with it. So this podcast is going to be a lot about all about security, and that sort of thing. And I don't know. Did you want to say anything about anything I just said before we?
Yeah, well, you know, your statement that you're not a guy who, you know, who can just take the opinion that, well, it's there, and I'm not doing anything wrong, therefore you shouldn't worry about it. I think is in fairly direct response to a statement I made to you a couple months back. We had this discussion along these lines, and I kind of believe in the needle and the needle stack concept, which is they're collecting so much information, they are collecting it from the lowest bidder, or at least a contractor that is from the lowest bidder. We have a government that couldn't coordinate a pretty important space landing on Mars with a $1 billion piece of equipment between the metric system, getting the metric system and the imperial system mixed up, not being able to get that coordinated and working, who has not been able to get their act together and get a balanced budget, who has not been able to really govern us effectively, who has the lowest overall rating ever in Gallup's history of asking the American public how they feel about their government. Rich, I don't have a lot of faith in our, you know, in the competency of the government. Now, that being said, that's the premise that I come from, and is that there's just so much, there's so much data, so many things going on that them tracking me down individually is almost mathematically impossible, based on all those factors that I just laid out, that they really struggle to get anything right. So I come from the other side of the equation, and even recently the Obama administration has announced they want to get out of the data business, right? They've taken a lot of heat on the NSA, and you know, it used to be no one even knew who the NSA was. They were a small little agency that kind of hid behind the FBI, who they were dark, they were black ops, they were magical, there were probably three guys in the Pentagon. That was all that the NSA was, really, to begin with. And now, you know, it's a common household word. You know, we equate NSA with spying on Americans, basically. And we probably just got picked up. So we'll see, Rich, because I just said a bunch of inflammatory things there. That if the NSA is listening and they can,
you know, they don't care about you.
That's what I'm saying.
And they don't care about me.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about them coming to my house, you know, in hoods and taking me off to some black site. That's not going to happen. That's not even what I'm thinking about primarily. I'm thinking about the information being used in a way that's inappropriate. You know, I mean, there's economic advantage in information.
Sure.
I mean, that's why people go to jail for insider trading.
Right.
You know, and I don't, you know, like I said, it wasn't my intent to get into a political discussion about it.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that for whatever reason, they are collecting. And, you know, Jim, when you read articles that refrigerators are the host of botnets, I mean, that's insane. It's not insane today because we know it can happen. But, you know,
people
are hacking appliances.
Sure.
And sure. I guess if you were paying attention, which, you know, I'm not really paying that close of attention, but I'll catch it. That shouldn't be a big surprise to us, I guess, because, you know, where's the security on a refrigerator? It's just meant to tell you how much milk you got left or whatever the temperature is. You know, they're not concerned with security, and so here we go again with somebody who said, let's just make it connect and work, except, oops, here comes the clever bad guy, we'll call him, who's figured out a way to make your refrigerator do his evil bidding. I mean, it seems ridiculous to say it, except for the fact that you're talking about a botnet, you know? So, You know, if everybody across the United States had a refrigerator and it was connected and somebody was able to wrangle up about 10% of those into a huge botnet, that'd be a pretty serious problem for whoever they were attacking. You know, it's crazy. This world has gone mad. And with that,
I don't know. The potential for that has always been out there. I mean, think of all the Windows XP machines that are out there right now that are unsecure and probably being used in that same, in that same manner. And yeah. I don't think it'll take, but maybe one high profile, high profile.
I don't know,
case
Jim, because all the XP machines are controlled are that's Microsoft's OS, so that's just one company.
Sure.
When you talk about a Mana or a Hotpoint or whatever your appliance is, now you're talking about different manufacturers who may or may not be paying, more or less attention to what's going on. And so I see that as more of a mess. But even if you argue that it isn't, then I would say, well, it's something new that we have not been thinking about. So now we got to wrap our minds around, appliances that can be hacked.
Yeah.
And it's making me wonder about my Nest thermostat, thinking, geez,
Yeah, but you put your Nest thermostat on the inside network, right? It's you're giving it a 192 address, right?
Yeah.
When it's picking up, which is not reportable to the internet, does not work.
Well, I can access it through the internet.
Well, no, you access it through a tunnel, right?
Okay. Now you're telling me more about it than I. Go ahead. Is that what it is? A tunnel?
Well, it'd have to be, right? You make a connection to it through their when you set it up on your network, you go to Nest and say, I want to connect this IP to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now that information is going out to Nest, so it can be recorded. That I'm assuming, and maybe this is to your point, I'm assuming that's a point-to-point secure connection, right? That can't tunnel back in through. They can't come back to it. It's only the Nest reporting out to, not the Nest coming back into. And since that is a non-reported IP address, right? It's the same.
Oh, my God. Right? I feel like I'm going to turn into Steve Gibson here, Mr. Paranoia tinfoil hat guy here in a second. I'm telling you. Hey, let's talk about some of these things I've got up here for today. Did you know that Intel has bought McAfee a while back? I think you probably knew that, right?
Sure.
And they're ditching the McAfee name over the next year or so. I don't know if you knew that, but they're going to ditch it and they're going to call it Intel Security. So McAfee, the name is going away. One of the reasons, part of the reason is because of, McAfee's history. I won't say that it's not a good, yes, I will. I don't think it's good at all. I think it's bloated. I think it's it slows down machines, and I think it's more trouble than it's worth in a lot of ways. But because of incidents that caused me to have that opinion, McAfee name is maybe not quite what they'd like it to be. So they're doing away with that name. I think another reason they're doing away with that name is because of John McAfee himself, who is, I didn't know this until recently, but he's quite a character. And by character, I mean somebody who may not necessarily be the PR sort of guy you want associated with a brand name. He's currently a person of interest in a year-old murder case in Belize.
That's great.
isn't that great? Peter Norton, John McAfee.
Yeah.
And then he's done some pretty comical digs, YouTube videos, which was a dig on the what a pain in the neck it is to uninstall McAfee. He actually poked fun of his own, it's not his anymore, but
yeah,
his own product.
Yeah, he's long since lost control of the company, right?
Yeah, he gave it up actually quite a few years ago. It's been just carrying his name for, I don't know, a decade probably since he's been involved, and maybe longer. But his videos are pretty funny out on YouTube. I will caution you, they're not safe for work. They're the NSFW variety. But you know, so watch them in, you know, the privacy of yourself and some other adults. They're kind of funny if you, you know, if you are open to that kind of humor. but again, it's not your typical PR move. You wouldn't see Steve Ballmer wouldn't have done anything like this.
Well, you hope not.
You hope not. Who knows? Maybe he has.
I think they're. I think it's good for Intel to ditch the name anyway. I mean, I think among the tech community, it looks like you said McAfee or McAfee, right? No one knows how to say it.
Says it's McAfee.
Yeah, but I've heard it both ways, and everyone struggles to know it. I think it's just fine to, you know, we see that as bloated software, and I think Intel is smart to just ditch it.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. My brother-in-law, Andrew, hit me up with an email about a week or so ago. And he told me about this new encrypted phone that's coming to market. It's called Black Phone. And I'll have to stick the...
Here, I'll do that for you.
Yeah, okay. One of the people behind Black Phone is Phil Zimmerman of PGP. And that's the encryption technology, that software that back in the day when Phil first created it, if I remember the story correctly, he came under investigation after it had been out for maybe a few months or a year or so. And he was being investigated for... creating something that people could export across international lines. And we're talking about exporting something that they classified. It was classified as munitions. So if you just put it up on the internet and you make that site available worldwide, then technically you're exporting it to anybody in the world, including, you know, the bad guys, whoever they are today. But that eventually that suit was dropped. But it was a 3-year-long period of time that they had him tied up with this lawsuit. And it turned out it was dropped. They actually raised the level of encryption standard that they considered to be munitions, which is interesting. But anyway, Phil is part of a company called Silent Circle, and he and I believe it's a European company called Geeks Phone teamed up to create this Android phone. The OS running on it is Android-based, and it's called Private OS, PrivateOS. And it's got built-in continuous encryption for voice messaging and texting. And so other than that, it's your basic stripped-down Android operating system. It doesn't come with all of the crapware that you would get with AT&T or Verizon or whatever.
So how do we know he hasn't built a backdoor into this thing?
Well, how do we know? Well, first of all, I guess you got to go by his track record. You know, he didn't back off when the government came after him back in the late 90s or early mid 90s. And from what I understand, he's I don't believe he's based in the U.S., so he doesn't fall under United States laws. That said, I suppose if the United States, if the, you know, the government was interested enough, maybe specifically the NSA or CIA or whoever, I suppose they could say, look, we're going to ban the import of this to American citizens. I doubt it. I think I doubt it, you know. But time will tell. It's going to be available here. I'm sorry, I can't remember specifically, but it's within, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, within the next 2 months it'll be available.
Yeah, the article says that it's expected to be officially unveiled on February 24th at Mobile World Congress. Pre-orders will kick off that same day.
Yeah. So I know I'm not going to bother to ask you if you'd buy one of these, because you don't care.
Yeah, I might not, probably.
You might not.
You know, I think if it was something that, you know, if it was something that was obvious after it came out and it was secure and it helped, you know, it looked like it was something that was going to go mainstream and we were just going to do that in general, great. If it's going to get included in some other things, I have no problems with that. I mean, it's not that I'm anti-security. I just don't worry about the current state of things as far as, you know, worrying about those kinds of things. So, yeah, I'd like to see it. You know, now this just gives the bad guys an advantage. So one of the things, you know, this is the struggle, right? This is that we have is for every tool we use to create privacy for ourselves, we create more privacy for the bad guys to do bad things. And so it's tough. I don't want to err on the side of over security, because this is how we got to where we're at, right? I mean, 9/11 is the reason we are at where we're at in the United States. And we chose to be over secure on our stuff. And that led to the current profile, you know, the current security profile we're under. So I don't know, Rich. It's a good question. Yeah. I wouldn't spend extra for it, but if it came included, I'd turn it on.
Yeah. Sure. So how it works is like this. If you call me, excuse me, if you call me on your black phone and I've got my GS4, you're only encrypted to the server that connects us. But if I've got a black phone, then the entire communication line is encrypted. So well, it really only works, it you know, so it's not going to impose a complete encrypted connection between an unsecured phone and itself. That's not going to happen. So you'd need to have somebody else.
Yeah. Well, but if the premise is that those codes have already been cracked, right, that the NSA has the back door to and has cracked all these security codes, does this change things?
Well, does, you know, I mean, you know, does anybody know, and can anybody say for certain?
I know.
But what I'm going to say is logically speaking, as a consumer who's just can't bother to keep, you know, pulling open that Russian nested doll thing and keep getting small, mm-hmm. At some point you got to say, look, he must have something here that's secure, that's not been compromised. You know, a lot of the way the NSA's gotten encrypted, gotten back doors is because, not because they sat there and broke the code apart, it's because they went up to somebody and said, you'd want to help us, don't you? Yeah, we want to help you. Can we stay out of, you know, can we just keep out of your target, you know, your crosshairs? Sure, we'll help you. Right. Don't tell anybody we helped you, you know. So, I don't know, this is actually just a fairly political podcast.
Yeah, well, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
If I disappear tomorrow, you guys know why.
if you disappear tomorrow, it's because you need a vacation, and that's all there is to that.
I could take one of those.
I know you could. All these podcasts. What did you do? Did you edit about 5 podcasts today before we did this one?
I did. Yeah. Well, 4 that's actually.
4.
Yeah.
Oh,
4.
Well, that's
not 4. Bad. 4. And I should have done some of them yesterday. And I went on an 8-mile trail run yesterday, which is the most I've done in a while. And I came in and I was just flat. You know, I was just flat. And so I spent the rest of the day doing nothing. And it's good to just take a down day. So I woke up early this morning and started cranking out. We got home tech ready to go. In fact, Christian was working on theaverageguy.tv. So as soon as we're done, probably later tonight, we'll post home tech. And then Gallup continues to just push me with podcasts. So I did 3 for them this week. One was a carryover from last week. But
good. So hey, that's really taken off for you.
It really is.
Your Gallup.
Yeah, the Gallup podcasts are going well. Yeah,
you're Mr. Podcast over at the Omaha Gallup.
Well, if you go to coaching.gallup.com, that's where they're That's where all those are at.
It's very cool.
It's coming along. Hey, you'd mentioned the GS4, and you'd mentioned an update in the notes here. An over-the-air update included some Knox security. Talk a little bit about that.
Okay, geez. The Knox security. I learned about this inside out. The first thing I found out about it was, here comes something that I can't uninstall, and I can't circumvent with a hack. I think there's probably a vulnerability that they've exploited so that you can actually root your phone. Now look, this phone is actually running great. It's a lot better than GS2 as far as battery life is concerned.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It really is. It's like at least twice as good.
It's a million times better.
Yeah, maybe a million times better. So seriously, it's much better. Do I want to mess with it? Probably not, but, you know, that's today. You know, maybe in another half a year or so, I might be, yeah, okay, let me back up what I got here, and let me throw something else on here and play with this a little bit and see. This Knox Security has this secure boot feature to it. It has a couple of features to it. And I'm not going to remember them all, but you could go to the website. It's, I think it's Samsung Knox. Let me see, what is it?
I'll throw that in chat as well, yeah.
It actually is.
SamsungKnox.com, yeah.
Yeah, it actually is, and you could read all about it. Now, what this is, what this was developed for, is so that I can bring my, you know, I can bring my phone to work, to the enterprise, and have, and what Knox does is it puts a virtualization layer between the enterprise applications and your own personal applications and data. So you can come in there, you know, theoretically come in there with a compromised phone, an infected phone, I would say, and not cause problems on the network because the phone comes with Knox securities in there, and the enterprise apps would be protected from, you know, whatever malware might be on your phone. That's a good idea. Yeah, it's a nice idea.
Except
what?
It currently has a small little problem.
It has a big small little problem, and I don't know that it's been fixed. But it as of December, mid December or so, it had a security flaw that gave hackers what they said was easy access to communications data, email, messaging, and other personal info. Wow! Thank you, Samsung.
Yeah. That's not great security.
No, that's not good security, you know?
I'm sure they'll get it fixed.
I'm sure they will. But I guess, you know, what really caught me originally was the fact that it just prevented me from rooting my phone and installing another operating system on there, another firmware on there. So, or ROM on there. Like I said, we'll see. Maybe and to tell you the truth, I think there actually is a vulnerability exploit that they have discovered. But from what I read, is that we're not really sure we trust the person who's done it yet. And this was a few weeks ago, maybe almost a month ago. I read about this. So maybe some other people have come up with a way to get around the secure boot feature of Knox Security. We'll see. In the end, they usually do. This cat and mouse thing keeps on going and going.
And keeps people in business.
Yeah.
Rich, one of the things, let's skip over a story because they've all been security related. Here, this is something that I really like. And the next story you've got here about CPUworld.com. So the other day I was chatting with you about CPUs, and you were just like, oh, let me go to this site, and you very, very quickly kind of told me how good the CPU is versus this CPU. So talk a little bit about, you've been using CPUBenchmark.net, but you found this new CPUworld.com. I'll put that in the show notes or in the chat as well.
Yeah, I see it as sort of an alternative to Passmark's CPUBenchmark.net. I've always, for years, I've used that, and I like it, and I still refer to it. But I found something. I found a site called CPU-world.com, and you can get in there, and it gives you a lot of head-to-head comparisons between a couple of processors. So if you want to compare an i7-2600K with the latest i7, the 4770K, you can do that. You can see what the temperature is, you know, the average temperature is for each one, power consumption, how it performs, and, oh God, I don't know, 30 or 40 different benchmarks, from synthetic ones to more realistic ones where they're just copying batches of files. Quite an array of data and information for you to sort through and help you figure out what you want to do if you're buying something new, or, you know, because I started looking at this because I was thinking I needed I have a 2600K, and I can run some virtualization programs on there, but it's missing a virtualization function that, because it's the K, that's kind of the trade-off. You get overclocking, but you lose a virtual part of the virtualization. I think it's the direct disk I/O. I was looking around for something else to use, and when I came across this site, I was able to figure out exactly, you know, it helped me figure out what I wanted to do, and I like it. You know, I just wanted to point it out to people. It is more extensive as far as the comparisons with CPU benchmark, and I'm going to put in the notes that, you know, the way I found it was as I searched it a certain way. I didn't just go to the site and then start plugging it, because, you know, I went to the site and I wasn't quite sure how to get to the comparison pages. Maybe it's me. Maybe I was a little bit dense about it. But what I originally did is I did a Google search. So specifically I did, I used the keyword site : no space, and then CPU-world.com, and then I typed in what I was looking for, so like the i7-2600 versus the i7-4770, and lo and behold, I came to the page I wanted. It was the first hit, actually, so nice. A lot of comparisons, a lot of metrics, a lot of benchmarks. Good stuff. I recommend it. Check it out, guys.
Very cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I need to spend some more time. I'm in upgrade mode right now. You know, I've been running two Core i3-540s for the last 2.5 years or so. Mm-hmm. And they've been good little boxes. They do pretty well with energy efficiency. They've served me well. One of those, the problem, though, is on the studio PC here, I'm getting some clicking. When I crank the video all the way up to HD here in the Google Hangout, and, you know, I do a lot of Google Hangouts because it's all that we do with podcasting, and I'm getting this weird clicking, although it seems to have stopped in my ears right now. I heard it earlier in the podcast, so I'm not hearing it anymore, which is kind of weird. So, you know, it's one of these times where I'm like, well, it's probably time to make an update here in the studio and at least get one of the PCs. I'm not using the broadcast server like I used to. You know, with Google Hangouts, we've been able to kind of make a jump. I no longer have to really use an audio bridge anymore. You know, I created a broadcast server with the idea of having this audio bridge that everybody would be coming into the broadcast server. I could record from one place. I'm pretty confident now with Google Hangouts, and I just start those from my main account like you're doing right now, mm-hmm. Hit play, and then when I'm done, I just go to Google and down, you know, YouTube. I just download the video and strip the audio right out of it for me. So it's gotten good enough that I don't even really need this. Honestly, I don't even need this broadcast server. It is running a third monitor up here, and it's kind of nice to have two PCs to have access to with Mouse Without Borders, you know, to be able to get – it's just nice
yeah.
to split
yeah.
that processing up across CPUs as opposed to having it all in one. So I like to keep it, but I think I am going to make a jump here to a Core i5 Haswell, you know, and I think that will probably be enough for what I'm doing. I'm not anticipating. I don't know.
Man, I'll tell you something. I'd love to see you go. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I know we've had that discussion of i5 versus i7, and you said
I'd love to see you go for as big as you can afford. I mean, if you're talking $100 more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, okay, depends on how you want to look at that. But for $100 more, I would go with the top. I would go with the I would go with a 4770.
Yeah, why not? But for me, Rich, it's a little more than just $100. It's heat, it's energy, it's, you know.
Boy, I don't want to tell you you're wrong, but
yeah.
I don't feel like that at all. I don't, you know, I think, first of all, each iteration of these i7s is a little bit more energy efficient, and this one's even more so. You know, are you running an SSD? Let me ask you that.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that makes a big difference right there. I mean, that'll let you get a lot more life out of an old i3-540. But I don't know. You know, I would love to see you grab one.
Well, and then Howard's
and then tell me, and then after using it for a couple of months, tell me you think you'd want to go to a lesser CPU.
Well, no, I mean, it goes without saying that, you know, it would be nice to get a Ferrari and then go back to my Honda Civic.
Oh, God, right? It's not a Ferrari. It's just $100 more.
Yeah, but
you're going to buy the same motherboard. You're going to buy a motherboard.
Yeah. In the scope of things. Well, it's just one of those things that I'm kind of thinking through. You know, the other thought with it, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, Rich, although, you know, it's one of those kinds of things. I like to try being the average guy. I don't like to always go at the highest end. You know, I kind of, because not everybody can do that, right? So I try to sneak out every little bit of value that I can get out of it. So I've got somebody. Mike Howard has been a big believer in AMD for what we do from a video, and he's actually done a lot of testing with Wirecast and XSplit and some of those, and has gotten better benchmarks out of his AMD multicore than the Intel i7 chips. And so he's kind of a big believer that for those, I mean, if you're talking value and you're talking heat, those AMDs run, they're cheaper, and they run a little cooler. So that's another...
Do they?
I think they do.
Okay.
I don't think they're as hot.
I don't know if I believe that, but yeah. If Mike says so...
Mike could probably answer that, Mike.
Yeah, I believe it, that if Mike says so.
core temperatures of your AMD... Now, it's tough to do apples to apples, right? Because you're comparing different things.
But I do believe him when he says the video, he gets better... performance when he's running his video applications out of his AMD. I believe him, you know. So maybe if you were going to, you know, revitalize your podcasting box, then maybe you'd want to do that there. But for your desktop, I would just go with the Intel.
Well, but the studio PC and the broadcast server have become one for me. So that's even more of an advantage to go to AMD, because I'm no longer using, you know, that broadcast server for what it's intended for anymore, and I am running everything off the studio PC now.
All right. Well, let me ask you, what are you looking at then? You said a Haswell i5, but
no, I haven't even started digging in on the AMD side yet.
Well, yeah. Then go to cpu-world.com.
There you go. There you go. We'll start comparing price and value, and. Yeah, he doesn't. Mike says he doesn't care about energy or heat. He's not worried about it. So.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things I like to consider. You know, I've got, this dual Xeon server sitting right below my feet here, and I can feel the heat coming off that. I mean, it warms
very nice.
Up basement area at least 5 or 6 degrees hotter than the rest of the house when it's running. Now in the winter that's great. In the summer I got to cool all that down. You know, and. So, you know, I'm a little energy conscious. I like to think that I'm doing everything I can to just use the minimum amount of power requirement I need to for this kind of stuff. So,
No, that's fine. I mean, I get it. You know, I don't like noisy computers. So when I build one, I buy the best fans that I can buy, and I put them on a controller so that I don't even have to listen to them spinning up at top speed, you know, so...
Right. Yeah, I can hear this one right down here. It, you know, I can hear this one running. And it's got six drives in it, and RAID card, and it's got two CPUs, and I'm running a couple VMs off of it, and it's backing up the house right now and some other things. But still, you know, you're kind of like, could I do it with less?
You could. Yeah, could I? I'm sure you could.
I probably
One
could.
One of those new AMDs for
Core
4770.
I think Mike's point is a good one, that AMD really has uses true cores, right? It uses not hyper-threading, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't give you four cores with two threads each for hyper-threading. The AMD is a true 8-core or 6-core.
You know, I don't think it matters. You could say it's a you could say it's anything, but when you run the actual tests, in most of the tests, except for the videos probably, Intel's going to take it. Now you can get into comparing dollar value for, you know, over performance. You might end up with the AMD chip in that case, but if you're talking about buying the top AMD chip and the top Intel chip at the consumer level, you're giving up some, you're leaving a lot on the table if you go with an AMD. That's my opinion.
Sure.
And again, if you are doing video like Mike is, then your choice is obvious. Go with the AMD. But for everything else, I would say Intel. So.
Yeah, the other consideration, I don't, with the Core i7, of course, you're going to have to go with some active cooling. And I'm not a big fan of water
now,
cooling.
You do not have to go water cooling at all.
On an i7?
Heck no. Who have you been talking to?
Everybody I know that has a Core i7 is cooling.
And everybody you know who has a Core i7 is an overclocking so-and-so.
No, not necessarily. All three of my boys have done
that.
Well,
you know me.
Yeah.
And I'm not overclocked. I'm not. I'm running a fan. What is it? The Hyper 212. And in the motherboard, I set it up so that it runs at, there's like 9 levels. 9 is full blast. I run it at level 1. And it's cool. But I've also got a case that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 100 and 3 140s and 1 120. And they're all just, you know, pulling air through there. They're all running at the lowest speed they can run, too. So, again, the total sound level is pretty low. I mean, I hear it, but then again, it's right there. I'm touching it right now.
Right, right.
It's sitting right at air level, so I can hear it. But it's well in the range of acceptable. You do not need to run, you do not need to run water cooling on an i7. That's just a matter of style and if you're overclocking. Mm-hmm. But if you're not overclocking, Jim, you could run probably the stock fan. I don't like the stock fan because I've always known them to be noisier, but you'll be fine.
All right. Change my mind.
Can't wait to hear the rebuttal on that.
Yeah, I've always everyone said best practice on those chips is to have them water cooled, and so I know a lot of those guys buy those water cooling, and I don't want to mess with that. To be honest with you, I do not want to mess with that.
No,
you
not don't.
Not interested in it.
Yeah, you don't have to. Now, you're talking about. Yeah, you don't have to.
Yeah, don't want to.
No.
Don't. I just don't want to. Yeah, I don't want it. And quiet is not necessarily a huge problem for me in a lot of ways because I can block a lot of stuff out here. I don't want it to be super loud. This Dell workstation, the 690 workstation, it's a little loud. I mean, I can hear it now, and you don't notice it until you turn it off, and then you're like, wow, that thing.
Yeah,
is loud.
Well, if you insist on keeping that, then look at some fans. Look at some fans and maybe a controller. I mean, an efficient controller, KAZ, I think it is, KAZQ, only like $19, and it works fine. You know, you can control 4 fans, and then get some fans that are just not OEM fans that came with the case, and you'll probably be much better. You know, and there's plenty of company names that you could find a good fan, a quiet fan that still move air. So
Yeah, well, and Mike's saying, you know, that water cooling's super easy now, and it's almost as easy as installing a fan. It's just one more thing to go wrong, right? I don't want it. It's just not something I want. I don't want that. Every time I go to do it, I'm like, nah, not gonna do it.
Well, it's your lucky day. You don't need it.
There we go. Speaking of not needing things, that was a terrible segue, but. Let's talk about, you picked up a Samsung 840 Evo 500 gig drive for your daughter's PC. Talk a little bit about that, the install.
Yeah, so this is a a drive that came out, as far as I can figure, after the Samsung 840 Pro, and it's called Evo, E-V-O, and it has something called SED, which is self-encrypting drive technology. This technology has been around for years, and I'm not sure how many years that would be, but feature of this is that on spinning drives, first of all, I'll tell you that the contention is that there is no hit to performance because it is doing encryption at the hardware level, and by hardware I mean on the hard drive itself. It's doing encryption at that level. So there is no performance hit for having encryption. In fact, the drive is always being encrypted and decrypted when you use it. The thing about the SED technology, which makes it attractive, is if you are going to repurpose a drive with sensitive data on it, you don't have to spend X number of hours debanning it. You just burn the key. And once you burn the encryption key, you lose the encryption key. That's it. You've got a drive full of nothing, you know, garbled data. Gobbledygook. So how this works is that the way it works is that the drive is always encrypted with what they call a MEK, which is a media encryption key. And that's always active, and it's always running. When you boot up, and if you haven't made use of the KEK, which is the key encryption key, then you're just going to boot up like a normal hard drive. The drive will decrypt on the fly, and that's that. If somebody gets a hold of it and steals your hard drive from you and throws it in their computer, they'll boot up, and they'll see all your stuff. So there's no encryption actually happening, even though it's actually happening, but a kind of funny way to say it doesn't matter. And it's not functioning in the way that you would think. Moving on. So what you do is you...
page two.
Well, I talked myself right into the circle, right into the ground on that one, didn't I? What you do is you make use of this function whereby you encrypt the MEK with a KEK. And so the MEK, which was encrypted before and just unencrypted before and just, was applied to the drive to unencrypt it, now is encrypted by this KEK. Every time you boot, you supply the KEK, and then your hard drive is unencrypted. It gets decrypted. If I were to steal your hard drive and bring it to my house and didn't have the KEK, I'd have nothing. If you were to steal it back and fire it up, and upon boot, it would say, okay, insert the key. There you go, you're back in business. So the cool thing about that is now when you are using the KEK and you burn the KEK, lose it, whatever, destroy it, now you can just pull it out of your system and give it to somebody else, even though it's got all the NSA's deepest secrets on it, supposedly, and give it to somebody else, and they'll never be able to crack it. So that's very cool. I suppose the reason why we haven't heard more about it is because upon boot, you have to supply a key. And so being, as most humans are as lazy as they can be, that probably put them off from wanting to actually use this SED technology. That said, it's now available on SSDs, And so, same deal.
So it's just going to require I put a password in when I log in or when I boot.
During the boot sequence. So what happens is there's an unencrypted partition, I guess, that boots first and it says, give me the KEK. Once you do that, it sort of reboots now unencrypted and with the whole hard drive unencrypted because it unencrypts the MEK and then the MEK, the media encryption key, media being the spinning drive, can now go ahead and decrypt the hard drive as it's booting. And so there you go. So that's how that works. It's pretty interesting. Now, for the use in an SSD, I'm not really sure how much I'm concerned about the idea of, the KEK is advantageous because I can just, lose the key and then hand this hard drive, this SSD to you. That's true. But I could also just boot up Parted Magic and in about maybe, 30 seconds or less, just secure erase the whole drive, and now you've absolutely got nothing. You haven't even got data that's gobbledygook that maybe you could crack in a, with a quantum computer that you don't have yet. I guess the thing that is beneficial about the KEK is that, and I don't know any more about this, I heard it works with BitLocker. So if you're using BitLocker and you're using something like a self-encrypting hard drive, SSD hard drive, then there's less wear and tear on that SSD. More than that, I couldn't say. But I briefly came across that information. So that's an advantage, I suppose, if you are running BitLocker. Less wear and tear.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
Yeah,
maybe it that's is how pretty
we,
cool.
Maybe that's how we defeat the people who are spying on us in the future.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah.
Rich,
wish.
You we're coming up with about 5 minutes. You real quick, you're the only guy I know that the preview caught the Windows 8.1 preview expired here in January, and you sent me a little note and said, "Hey." You had an instance of 8.1 that came up and said, I'm not going to work anymore.
Oh, no. Was I the only guy? Holy smokes.
Well, just that I heard of.
Yeah.
Maybe lesser men don't actually admit it.
They wouldn't admit it. I'll never admit that. I was caught off guard. Yeah. It's turned out to be no big deal. You just say, okay, yeah, you got me. And then you just keep using your preview. But I went ahead and I wiped it, wiped my desktop and my laptop, and I installed some TechNet versions of it. So of 8.1, I'm good to go. I'm liking 8.1 more and more as time goes on. I mean, it just boots up so quickly and it shuts down quickly. And it just, it just seems to be pretty fast. Yeah. I like the overall functionality of it, I really like.
The more I work with it, the less it becomes an issue,
Yeah.
Just kind of like, man, whatever. Like, it's just a different way of doing stuff. So it's it has slowed me down a little bit on the RT device. I don't use that as much as I probably should because I don't, because I don't have access to some of the x86 programs that I use. But,
That's not a surprise, but...
Yeah, it's not designed for that, right? That device is not designed to be necessarily
and
a
you
desktop
bought it.
Replacement.
So what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do?
I don't know. I have not used it. I have not used it. No. Well, my daughter, when I first brought it home, she loved it. Mm-hmm. And it's perfect for her. So it might be, you're right.
Is she aware, though, that she can't install?
She doesn't need to. There's nothing she installs.
How old is this daughter?
She's
high school?
She's 15, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's nothing she installs. So
okay.
It's got Office on it and the things she needs for that kind of stuff. And that may not be a bad idea because it's sat in my bag now for about 4 weeks. I haven't pulled it out.
Yeah.
I'm just not using it. And now, that being said, I mean, my work laptop's pretty good. So I use, you know, when I'm at work, I use the heck out of that thing. And, yeah, so it's, like I said, RT just has not been, it's not bad, just is not my go-to device. You know, a lot of times if I need quick information, I'm just going to take it off my phone, pull that out. And that's got connectivity anywhere, yeah. You know, and a pretty good screen. So it's been interesting to say the least. So, well, hey, let me, you and I committed to an hour and we're coming up on that hour. Let me, are you okay with me bringing this in for a landing or anything else? You should say thanks to Mike Fauché for.
I should say thanks to Mike Fauché. So after going to CPUworld.com, I actually found a good deal on the home server network forums, and Mike Fauché was getting rid of an i7-2600 system, which supports all the virtualization functions that I was looking for. He got rid of that, a motherboard, and a heat sink. He threw in a heat sink fan. And I even hate to say how much he charged because it was such a great price. It was $115 plus shipping, which was less than $20. So for $135, I got a processor, which was $300, and then a motherboard, which is well over $100, and then a heatsink fan, which was another maybe $30 or $35 or whatever it was. So, not bad. It's sitting right over there. It's recording today's show. So, I'm really digging it.
Yeah, I wish I had a good buy, and
thank you, Mike Fauché. You know, it's always good to be near Mike Fauché whenever he says, I got something for sale.
I need to, hopefully he'll have another sale, because maybe that's the way I'll pick up my next one.
Yeah, yeah. This would have suited you.
Yeah, no, it would have been great.
Yeah.
I even saw it, and I thought, and then I didn't pull the trigger. I should have.
Yeah.
I should have indeed. Very cool. Well, this will conclude our 26th episode of Rich's Random Podcast Generator, and each one of them is different. If you're watching this for the first time and you're like, what is this? We got a bunch of back episodes as well. If you go to theaverageguy.tv and click on, there'll be a subscribe or whatever. You can click on that. It'll take you back to all the episodes, the back episodes. Rich and I do them about every other month or so. It's just a time for us to get together anytime Rich wants to do a brain dump of anything that he's been thinking about or learning or working on or those kinds of things. It's a good opportunity for us to get together on a Sunday afternoon. That's kind of when we've defaulted a lot on these a lot is Sunday afternoons. Yeah. 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern, and the snow's not too bad up there for you, is it? Did you guys get dumped on?
It's been cold winter. It's been right around zero. It's been a very cold winter this year.
Yeah.
Unusual.
Yeah, we got that polar vortex, they like to call it, that all of a sudden became a really popular name. They used to call that the Arctic Express was what it was called before this vortex name came out. We get the winds race down the Rockies, and they come through the Midwest, and we super chill. Actually, that's going to happen right now. So right now outside, it's really actually pretty pleasant. I think we're in the 40s, maybe the high 30s.
Yeah.
It will be, by midnight, it'll be -6. So we have got this. We're gonna cool off very, very rapidly over. And we get one of those a winter, and this is the third time it's done that, where there's been a 30 or 40 or 50-point swing in less than 12 hours. And that's pretty shocking when you get that cold that fast, you know. The other day I was out and, you know, it was warm and I was actually in a t-shirt. We were in the 50s, you know, and I'm like, this is great. It felt warm. Next day, -7.
We're the same wear up here in Maine.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe even more so. It's just crazy the temperature swings up here. So we're looking at 16 right now. And to answer your question, yeah, we've actually gotten quite a bit of snow so far this year.
Yeah.
But none, and a small little bit of snow in the last week. But maybe about 7 days ago, we got a pretty good storm. So
yeah, I know my friends out in Ohio, they're getting smacked this year. They got a foot or two on the ground in most cases, and so it's been a crazy, crazy winter. Just maybe they always are. Hey, a couple reminders before we go. I did an interview with Robert Scoble this week, if you're interested in viewing that. It'll be out on the Gallup Network channel at about Wednesday, I think, Wednesday afternoon or so, coaching.gallup.com. If you want to pop out there, probably by the time you listen to this, if you're listening to the recorded version, it's already available. And just look for that interview with Robert Scoble. A great interview. We talk a little bit about Rackspace. We talk about him and his strengths and some of those things as a tech guy. So if you're familiar with Robert and the work that he does, it was a great opportunity to interview him. And my podcasting worlds collided at that point. Mike and I sat down, and we made a video on the Fitbit Force last weekend, actually last Thursday, that I put out last weekend. If you haven't seen that yet, just go out to theaverageguy.tv and in the search box type in Fitbit. Although I had some trouble with my Fitbit Force this weekend. It's doing some weird things, so I don't know. It's been a little sketchy out of the chute, so we'll see how that goes. And then don't forget, we just produced another video this weekend. Actually, the last two have been kind of interesting. One, Drew Davies, a designer from Omaha here, Kerry Adams, who came from Power Rocks to join us to talk about batteries. Lots of interesting interviews. We just kind of talk about their business and what they do. We're mixing those in a little bit on home tech just to get a variety. It's not always computers that we're talking about, so. Love to have you go out and view those as well. Rich, thanks for hanging out with me this afternoon.
Absolutely.
And this will close
and
up.
Just to clarify, we are trying to make a more of a commitment to do it once a month, so not every other month.
Yeah, well, we'll do them when we can. Life gets busy, so.
I see.
You know, you and I, both busy guys, and yeah. When Rich does school, he goes all the way in. And that's good. It's good that you do that. You get real focused with that, and that's always a good thing to do. We'll be back with 27, and let's just say 3 or 4 weeks from now. And thanks for listening, guys.